when you're about to go down that path where you're going to say kids these days, ... all you have to do is finish it and say, are growing up in a very different world than I am.
Generation Z, how do we mentor them? How do we teach them? What is it that they say about themselves?
I've always been impressed with our drive, our want to do something productive, and our need for change.
Welcome to the Learning Vibes podcast. I'm Dr. Annie Ranking, and in this episode of the Learning Vibes podcast, you're going to hear a discussion that my co-host Dave Knowlton had with Dr. Corey C. Miller and Dr. Megan Grace. This is a continuation from our August episode. A lot of the discussion focuses on helping Generation Z learn, so it's perfect content as we move into a new school year. Then, in the second half of this episode, Dave talks to five members of Generation Z about their experiences, their beliefs, and their goals. We hope you enjoy these discussions.
Well, where do we go from here in trying to help our listeners think about Generation Z, their merits, what they bring to the table, and how to better understand them?
I think the first, it takes a mindset shift and like asking your question when you're about to go down that path where you're going to say kids these days, ... All you have to do is finish it and say, are growing up in a very different world than I am. And that's it. And like, then you realize, like, if I was responding to today's world and I was 18, I would probably be behaving the same way. And rewinding yourself back to being 18, 19, 20, or if this is a, you know, college age setting, thinking about where was I in college? And if I was in college in today's world, I'd probably be reacting similarly. And that's like that mindset check, that gut check to remember that, like, it's okay to be where you're at in your phase of life, but it's also good to take the perspective of someone else, especially when we think about what is the benefit of having a diverse team. And if we think about what is the benefit of having someone with age and wisdom coming in with someone that has information and passion and blending those two together, we have something that is a great opportunity when we think about helping generations work together. That would be the one thing I would suggest to any person in an older generation. And then the next thing would be like, what can I give to a younger generation? Like, I don't have children right now. I'm not actively teaching students, but I love opening up my opportunity to mentor young people today and be a place of giving back my time and giving back even just a little bit of my wisdom, whatever it might exist there for young people, and helping make connection for them in their future so that they can thrive.
Fantastic. Corey, do you have anything to add to that?
I think one of the other things that's really important to know about this generation, regardless of the capacity in which, you know, older generations work with them, is that because they're growing up in a different time, they've had different types of exposure to learning and developing as humans that are just vastly different than other people. There was a Pew study that came out a few years ago that talked about how much time high school kids spent after school with their friends in person, certainly pre-COVID. And the numbers have been dwindling year over year, is this idea that kids are spending less in-person time with their friends. They're going home, they're checking their technology, those kinds of things. And, you know, as Megan said before, had we had access to this kind of technology when we were young, we probably would have done the same thing. But the reality is because they're growing up in these times in which things are a little different, and every generation has their own differences, there's some skill sets that some older generations might take for granted. And we're finding that in our studies that our participants are saying things like, I'm not sure that I have the confidence or even the competence to be able to have kind of an informal conversation or just kind of hang out or just, you know, make chit chat with people. That makes me anxious. It makes me nervous because I'm not very good at it. And part of it is they just haven't had as much interaction. I mean, Pew is showing that we're just not, I mean, practice makes perfect in some ways, right? You got to practice it. And if you don't have as many informal conversations, you're not going to be quite as comfortable. And so there's some things when we think about too, especially in a higher education setting, when we're saying, okay, again, like, hey, like turn to your neighbor and to ask them, you know, introduce yourself. And it's like, well, that might be something that's very, you know, common and easy for many older folks that was just how we grew up. You're talking about a generation where somebody is literally, you know, their heart is palpitating and they're just like freaking out about the idea of turning to the person next to them to introduce themselves. And so we have to take a step back a little bit and create environments that feel safe for them to be able to explore things like just having discussions and dialogues and hanging out and introducing themselves to people that they don't know. And, you know, I'm not saying that all of them are like, you know, have this, but it came up enough in our surveys to say, wait a minute, this is something that we should be paying attention to, or at least not taking for granted that there's a blanket comfort and competence in being able to do these things. The other thing where this plays out is in terms of their learning. You know, I prefer collaborative learning. I love collaborative stuff. I love getting together and working on group projects. This generation, not so much. Do they need to have that skill? Yeah, absolutely. So I should absolutely keep it in the curriculum, but do I need to be mindful of the fact that some of them don't really prefer that learning style? Yeah, I do. And I need to think about different opportunities to help them work better in groups, help them understand the value of collaborative learning, things that maybe were a given for people who just naturally like that. But for, you know, students who don't, I might need to take a little bit more time to say, okay, here's what we're doing. I know that it's not your first preference, but, you know, I want to teach you this. But then also being open to the fact that I'm not making every single thing in a learning preference that they don't have. That, you know, this generation, a lot of them like intrapersonal learning where they journal, they reflect, they do projects on their own, they do self-directed learning. How can I incorporate more of that into the curriculum? Because my natural tendency is immediately get in groups, let's pair up. And one of the things that is really important with them is they like to see how something is done before they do it themselves. I mean, they're on YouTube before they're on Google. They want to watch something. And so in many ways, we need to almost demonstrate for people like what they need to do. And you know, when we think of teaching, we're like, oh, demonstrations. Okay, that's chemistry class. But like in every type of class we need to do, like if we're going to assign a case study, we need to maybe spend 15 minutes in class and do a case study as a group to show them how it works. And so some of these things where we're just like, quick, break into groups, or quick, talk to your neighbor, or here, do this case study. Those are the kinds of things where, you know, we're assigning that to a generation that has had less exposure, less practice with some of those kinds of skills. And so we have got to reel it back a little bit in our courses, in our parenting, in our supervision, and say, okay, let's start where they're at.
You know, that's really interesting to me. And I'm thinking about my own parenting and my own pedagogy and my own research into creative achievement. And one thing we know is the value of trying to develop competence, not trying after you have competence. And we know the importance of failure and hitting dead ends and working through that. And so I'm having a little bit of a pedagogical argument with myself, because I'm teaching a class right now where I literally say in the syllabus, I cannot teach you design. Design cannot be taught. It can only be learned. Go. And to some extent, I'm not looking for right and wrong answers. I'm looking for them to immerse themselves in the experience and find their own way. Given what we know about Gen Z, I think I hear you suggesting that might be inappropriate and need rethinking in terms of a teaching strategy or a parenting strategy or a boss assigning and an approach to a project strategy.
Well, I think, you know, I think it's interesting because, again, we go back to this idea as it's an and not necessarily an or. So something like that kind of assignment is actually very powerful. However, what I would say is you might want to preface it with a very miniature version of what you're asking them to do with the class as a whole, with you kind of leading the reins. Because if they can see it and they know where in some ways, the guardrails, they understand that that, you know, while you don't want them to have parameters, they do worry about parameters because they're young and they want to know, like, how many words do I have to write? How many pages is this? They need to know those kinds of things. And so if you get those out of the way and you say, okay, here's what you need to do, then they can be creative thinkers. It wasn't until I actually started giving model papers, templates for assignments that seemed like incredibly restrictive, right? Goes against everything I've ever been taught about creativity. I have seen more creativity since I have done that than before I did, because they used to get so hung up on all the details of, you know, I don't understand, how should this be formatted? And I'm like, I don't want you to think about formatting. And they're like, okay, but I can't be creative because all I'm doing is thinking about formatting. And so after I got that out of the way, and I would give them model assignments, and I would give them, you know, and in the models I would give them would be like two or three that were vastly different from each other, so they could see that there was creativity. I have had some of the most creative stuff come up from that. It's been really, really, really refreshing.
Well, and I think another point to that is we've seen that one of their fears is failure and letting people down. And so if there's too much ambiguity to them, wading through the ambiguity and getting it wrong is a bigger failure. And so it's a matter of, yes, and a lot of learning is understanding complex concepts and weaving them together. And you talked about teaching people design and how you can't teach someone design, you learn design. To them, that feels very ambiguous and scary and overwhelming. And so it's demystifying the fact that, like, you won't fail. There aren't wrong answers. And that's something that we have to continually give young people today, this mindset of, like, you might say something that could use refinement, but you're not going to fail. Like, we're not going to let you fail. We care too much about you. And I tell that to my interns. I tell that to former students, that in life, no one's going around with a grade book, but being a deep critical thinker is very important. And that's what I want you to get out of this, and telling them that I'm your safety net. I will not let you fail. There will be no failing because I will guide you. And that's the message they want to hear, because they seek out mentorship. They want people that care about them, because they care about people immensely. And so it's taking away this kind of this psychological buildup that they've had around education and school specifically, is I take the test to get the good grade, to get the good GPA, to get the good SAT, to get into college. And then they get to college and we're like, be ambiguous, learn things abstractly. And they're like, what? It is not what I was taught. And so it's helping them also break down some of these very formal structures of learning how to learn, and knowing that learning how to learn is messy and you can't really fail. It just, everyone takes their different route to getting there. But that takes a lot of support. It takes a lot of emotional investment, and it does take relationships.
In the remainder of this episode, Dave talks to five members of Generation Z, including one of his own daughters. We can learn a lot about interacting with Gen Z just by listening to them.
Hey, Kristen Stewart, welcome back to the Learning Vibes podcast.
So happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you. Could you remind our listeners who you are and where you are in the world and what you do and your plans for this fall as a member of Generation Z?
Yes. So I'm Kristen Stewart. I just graduated in May from Briarcrest Christian School here in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm enrolled at Stanford University in Birmingham, Alabama for next fall. I will be a musical theater major with a minor in commercial music. So that's exciting.
Fantastic. Good school, Samford is. What are you looking forward to the most about going to Samford?
I'm going to be singing, dancing, acting, and doing all of these things that I'm super passionate about as part of my education. And that's just so incredibly exciting, because that's my dream. And it took me a long way to get to where I felt confident enough to, like, go for that. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to regret it if I don't at least try. What's the worst that can happen? But the other thing that I'm really excited about is, like, I have my parents who are wonderful and super supportive. I've leaned on them a lot. I'm excited to kind of grow in my independence and kind of get to where I can do a lot of things by myself and not sort of rely on my parents as a safety blanket as much. Just kind of growing into practicing adulthood.
Yeah, right on. That's a good thing to practice.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, when you think about your peer group, what are some of the things that come to mind about your peer group when you just think about who you all are as a generation?
Gen Z, or at least the people that I know, fine arts kids, are pretty driven and they aren't afraid to go for these dreams. Like, I have friends that have gone into majors for fine art specifically, and that's a tough biz. That's a really difficult place to make a career, and they go for it anyways. I'd say we're an ambitious generation.
Hey, Connor Huggins, welcome back to the Learning Vibes podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back. So my name's Connor Huggins. I live in Selmer, Tennessee. I go to McNary Central High School, do a bunch of music stuff. I'm in the band there. I'm starting to write my own music now, so that's kind of a new thing I'm doing. I'm getting ready for my senior year of high school. I'm in college classes at the moment, getting ready for that, taking any opportunity I can get at this point.
Wait a minute. You just finished your junior year of high school, but you're taking college courses?
I am. So I actually finished my junior year with 8 hours because I was enrolled in a dual enrollment biology class. So I got credits for high school and college. So I'm already done with science for general ed, which is wonderful. A community college in Mississippi, they did this thing of, which is the greatest deal I've ever heard. It's free college classes. They were going through the summer, and some of them were like a month class, like in person, some were virtual that were 2 months, whatever. I'll get 3 for psychology and 3 for calculus. So I'll be at 14 credit hours. Wow. And then, yep. And then this, during the school year, I'm taking a dual enrollment English class that will cover English 1 and 2. Gives me another 6 hours. So I'll graduate with 20 college credits.
Holy smokes. How do you do it? What motivates you?
My goal is to do music in school, and going out of there, you don't really have much time for, you know, you're not a guaranteed job for music at ever. So my hope is maybe I can, you know, get through some of that college stuff. So the extra time I have, I can use to focus on like whatever my minor is going to be, or doing internships or whatever.
You know, you are very accomplished, very driven. Do you find that to be true, that many of the people you go to school with are as driven and motivated as some of your activities suggest that you are?
Oh yeah. Like, there are so many great people at my school. Like, every day, me and my two best friends, we drive to a college every day to go to the psychology class. We all decided to take this together, right? And, you know, we are driven to do more because we have the opportunity to do more. Because, I mean, like, the more opportunities you're given at a younger age, the more you're going to be able to expand your knowledge and the more you want to drive and push yourself. And now I have this opportunity to go to school and do something with it after I graduate high school. That's an opportunity I'm going to take. And I might fall flat on my face, but you're never going to know until you try.
So I'm here with my daughter, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
I just graduated high school. And in the fall, I'm going to Illinois State University to major in human development and family science.
That's awesome. And as I told you, this episode is about the brilliance of young people and trying to get the older generation to think about how they interact with young people. Can you just tell us a little bit about your experiences of interacting with people from the older generation?
A lot of the older people I've talked to, definitely you can tell that they go into the conversation thinking that I don't really know much and kind of talking to me like I'm 5 years old.
What makes you feel that way? What are some specific things they do that make you feel like they're talking down to you?
Most of the time it's the tone they use, or they'll use very like simple language, even though sometimes I've heard these people use bigger words. They use very like watered down language.
And if you could give one piece of advice to people older than you as they think about your Generation Z, what would that advice be?
That we're not all out of touch and we know what's going on and we can have mature conversations with you and we have opinions about important things that are going on in the world and we care about important things that are going on in the world.
What's something going on in the world that's an important issue to you, or you think it's an important issue to a lot of people in Generation Z?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is the election that just happened. A lot of older people seem to just think that no younger people cared, or when younger people would voice their opinion, they would say, oh, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You'll understand when you're older.
Even as an adult, I hate that. Well, you'll understand when you're older.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Hey, Darren Kirsch, welcome to the Learning Vibes podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing these days as a member of Generation Z.
I'll be going to my senior year of undergrad at Missouri State in Springfield for chemistry as my major. And I have a German minor. And after this summer, I'll be completing my sustainability minor.
Oh, very cool. And sehr gut on the German. I will tell you, I took 4 semesters of German when I was in college. It took me 7 semesters to pass those 4 semesters of German. So I know what you're doing isn't easy. That's very cool. So a chemistry major, and you're doing some interesting things this summer with science, right?
I am. I'm a research assistant at SLU this summer. And the nice thing is I'm part of a group of fellow undergraduate students and also a couple of high school students. But the specific project, we're all doing different projects. So the project that I'm working on, it's just me and the professor. Every Thursday, we have a meeting with all of us students and all the professors to sort of discuss updates on how our projects are going. We flip every other week because there are enough of us that we only get through maybe 3 or 4 presentations in the hour. So then the other half does the next week.
If I'm hearing you, most of the people working in the lab and helping with these projects are high schoolers or college students, so they are members of Generation Z. Just as you think about your experiences dealing with these young scientists, what makes you proud as you hear their work in terms of being a part of their generation?
I've always been impressed with our drive, our want to do something productive and our need for change. And is everyone that I know, there's a deep passion for, even if they don't necessarily know what to do, everyone wants to find that thing that they could do to make an impact, something that in the future they can go, I did this, the world was in chaos, but like this is a thing that I did. Fixing like no, I didn't discover how to make the COVID-19 vaccine, but I've been able to have some fun opportunities that will at the very least line me up pretty well for whatever my future career is.
Isabel Johnson, welcome back to the Learning Vibes podcast.
Thank you for having me. So my name is Isabel. I just graduated high school and I plan to attend Alabama at Birmingham to study theater and film. I'm a published author and I have another book coming on the way. And what I ultimately want to do is produce my books into movies and plays and films and stuff like that, and then produce and be in them.
So let me get this straight. You are 18 years old and you already have a published novel?
Yes, sir.
And another one on the way?
Well, I've been writing ever since I can really remember. I always had like the dream of being an author, but it wasn't something I really was like set on. And then when I was 15, I got the idea for my book, The Incredible Adventures of Mr. Markadoo. And I was like, I'll just do it for fun. Why not? And then I started writing and then I got like 100 pages. And then I got 200 pages. And then I finished it. And I was like, all right, well, what now? And my dad was like, hey, you know, you should think about publishing it. And I was like, no, no way. It's like, no one's going to read this. No, thank you. And he was like, come on, it's really good. Just try it. If you don't like it, we can just take it down. So we self-published it and I started advertising it and I'm now getting a following on social media. People love it. And I got another book coming and it was just, okay, this is happening. That's and cool.
What's the title of the second book?
The Curious Shop on Dandelion Lane.
Very good. Outstanding. I cannot believe. I mean, you know, I do some writing myself, not fiction, but nonfiction. And Isabel, I just know how much confidence one has to have to go through that process and to commit thoughts into words and then to share it with the world. Where does that confidence come from for you?
It took a lot of like convincing myself, like, you know, if people don't like it, that's okay. Just try it. It's something new. It's a part of you. Like, people can see who you are. And I personally made the story very symbolic of biblical ideas. And I really liked that. And I was like, this is just another way to like, you know, share your faith. And I was like, okay, now I have to do it. Now I'm obligated. And so now it's just like, I see how much I love these books and how much they bring me joy, especially in times of like quarantine. Like, one of the reasons like it helped me get through is writing The Curious Shop on Dandelion Lane. You know, I want other people to experience what I experience writing them.
Could you just talk about your own feelings about your generation and some of the brilliance that you see coming out of your friends and others who are close to your age?
Yeah, sure. I feel like our generation tends to get a lot of recognition for being like lazy or quote unquote overly sensitive. And just stuff like that, all negative descripting words. But I really feel like our generation, you know, even though we have the luxury of social media and technology, and that's never really been around before, you know, people use it for bad, but I feel like we've started to make a difference with it as well and raising awareness of issues that weren't really spoken about before. And I mean, it's intimidating. It's something that doesn't really, is that don't want to be talked about, I think. And the fact that they're being brought up is intimidating and it's a little scary and new, obviously. And I think that's where a lot of the recognition of, oh, you're young, you don't know what you're talking about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And what would you say to people of the older generation as they better try to understand your generation and interact with people your age in meaningful ways?
I would say don't underestimate our intelligence. I know, you know, you're older, you're wiser, you lived really great and amazing lives, but we're the future of the world and we also have so much to do and so many great ideas. And just imagine the difference we can make if we work together instead of trying to tear each other down.
Mm-hmm. www.learningvibespodcast.weebly.com. The Learning Vibes Podcast is self-produced by Drs. David Knowlton and Annie Ranking. Theme music, copyright 2019, Dave S. Knowlton.